Hello and welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. Eric Steven is here. We're recording a little bit later than normal this week, originally delayed because you were busy, I was busy, and we're thinking, hey, maybe Justin Turner will sign.
Right. There was a point. So we normally record Wednesdays. We were going to postpone it. I think we originally postponed to Friday, and then it was like, it looks like the Trevor Bauer thing will solve itself by Friday, so let's wait until after he signs to get a full reaction. And it happened Friday, like, well, not, I guess technically not officially yet, but like, yeah, it was as weird as everything was, it was still like a holy crap moment when it sort of happened. For like a number of reasons.
Yeah. It was a moment for me. I was more than so. I maybe not quite shocked because I know the Dodgers have been linked to him for a while, but we'll get into this why I didn't exactly believe that. And yeah, we'll talk about that. We've got questions from Craig. There's probably some other stuff that has some other stuff happened.
Well, you not know really. What?
We're just talking about this, aren't we?
there actually is, and I didn't put it in the notes, but like there actually was like a relatively important thing that happened, and I'll get to it before we get into Bauer.
All right, we'll do that after this.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
So Trevor Bauer is going to be a Dodger.
Apparently, looks like it. We're recording this February 6th, Saturday. Bauer announced the decision on his YouTube and various social media channels because, of course, and the video ended with him, you know, it's like a Trevor Bauer highlight video with him narrating, and then it ends with him like in a generic Dodger uniform, a non-numbered Dodger uniform, and he says like, let's go Dodger fans or whatever he said. I forget what he said at the end, but my brain, when I saw that, was like, how many endings did he actually film? Like, you know, so in the like montage showing like a jersey being like stretched out or made or whatever, I believe there was a Mets one. I think there was a Blue Jays one in there. And he's had other videos. Like, there's one video like of a month ago when he's talking about like different teams, and it's like him in like a full Dodgers uniform, you know, with cap and everything. And like, of course, he's throughout the offseason, he'd be like tweeting people like, "Hey, Angels fans, you up?" You know, that kind of stuff. And like, so in my head, it's hilarious if there's like 30. If he literally filmed all 30 teams and got full uniforms for each one, but like, just, you know, it's probably down to like, you know, a couple at the end. So at least Dodgers, at least Mets, probably Blue Jays, maybe he had in there. So I just want to see the cutting room floor is what I'm saying of that video. But the point of this, so we're recording this. We know that spring training, at least for the Dodgers and most teams, reporting day for pitchers and catchers is February 17th because on a previously discussed issue last week on the podcast, these run together. I don't know when we talked about things before, but MLB sort of pressured the Cactus League to send a letter to MLB saying, hey, you know, it'd be great if we postponed this because of health and stuff. They used actual terms in the letter. But then the players were like, we probably should have figured this out months ago. You're telling us now when players are, some are already in Arizona and Florida. They're making very like preparations, and delaying for a month isn't going to do anything other than cut into the time where, you know, you could potentially shorten the season, which is usually MLB's ultimate goal the last couple of years. So they're just sticking with the CBA in question. MLB did make an offer. The thrust of it was actually paying the players for 162 games for a 154 game season, which on its face sounds like a departure from MLB's tactic, but it came with like fewer off days, a lot of doubleheaders, so there's an injury risk, and it there was the issue of like the season still possibly, you know, getting postponed or Manfred having certain powers. They reportedly resolved those issues, but as we talked about before, the main issue is extra playoff revenue, because they attached all these things to it. Like, we want to include extra an extra round of the playoffs like they had last year. And the postseason guarantee to the players was still about $80 million, which was the 2019 number. They didn't offer the players enough to accept the deal, basically. And the players saw, they said, nope, we'll just stick with the schedule. So for now, everything's sort of on point. Like February 17th, they could still add like the DH and the expanded playoffs. Like last year, they literally added that like hours before opening day. They could work this out eventually, but like for now, they're going to go forward with spring training as planned. No other sports have been like, you know, hockey, football, basketball, they're all playing right now. So there's no like real reason to postpone it if you're being consistent. So I don't know. It's weird, but like we have actual dates that are, I don't want to say set in stone, because nothing's really set in stone now, but that gives us the timeline we're working with Bauer. But back to Bauer, like the shockingness of it all. So the funny part of this was it started on Friday, or like late Friday.
Early Friday, right? It was Thursday, I was in meetings Thursday. And you messaged me and you're like, oh, let's postpone just to wait until Bauer's a Met.
Yes, but remember, I forgot, but Nightingale's tweet was Thursday.
Okay.
Bob Nightingale, notorious, hilarious tweeter. He tweeted, quote, Trevor Bauer and the Mets have a deal. Looking back, like, it turns out they did not have a deal. But looking back at this, the tweet was actually sent at 4:20 on Thursday, which is only like funny in a ironic sense, because Bauer, in his very bro sense, a couple years ago, he had something called the 69 Days of Giving, where he gave various charities $420.69, like one per day, and just, you know, just a peach. But anyway, back to that. So you always watch, right? So Nightingale tweets this out. None of the like usual like national reporters like followed after, and you're like, uh-oh, like, is this going to hold? And you know, no one was really jumping on it. And then it didn't really happen until, I guess, there were reports coming out where the Mets, it was down to the Dodgers and the Mets. We knew that like Thursday night. That was roughly the consistent reporting. Down to the Dodgers and Mets. The Mets apparently wanted to get this resolved, so they set like a noon deadline Friday, noon Eastern time, so 9 a.m. Pacific. The reports were that the Mets were offering like 3 to 4 years, like over $30 million average annual value, so like a big contract. Seemingly every report was like, the Dodgers want them, like, but like on a short-term deal. Like, and we've seen this before. Like, it happened with Bryce Harper. It happened with Yu Darvish. And we always, like, there's like this
fanciful, and it's always been floated, like, that like this is what Friedman's always wanted to do, is do these 1 to 2 year 50 AAV or whatever deal. That was like the Bryce Harbor number of past. It was like,
but I don't think it never got up to, like, yeah, but it was like, it was always like something they would say ridiculous, right? Like, yeah, where you, it would make them like, well, I guess I could take it. But like Harper ended up signing for 13 years, right? So like you could see why. Yeah. And that's usually how these end. Like, no, they'll just take
and,
the big
and this
bucks,
is how the
like,
Yankees
right?
were used for years, is like, okay, maybe the Dodgers would do that year. And the reporting that seemed to be more than just a joke, but like in a sort of pie in the sky, this is never actually going to happen. The Dodgers are just being used to leverage the other team that he'll eventually go to.
Yep. And then so come Friday, it was a little after, like, I want to say 11 a.m. Pacific. I believe John Heyman was the first to tweet it. And, it, you know, it's funny because, like,
it was right Heyman, before, because I was about, no, you're right, you're right, you're right, right after two, because I was about to go into therapy. My normal therapy session. I'm like, oh, no, I have something to talk about.
Heyman tweets a lot in with no capitalization. And, like, I'm not going to ding a guy for not, you know, punctuating or whatever, but it's just kind of funny. And I believe it just said Trevor Bauer to Dodgers or something. It was very,
I think just Bauer to Dodgers,
yeah. Yeah, it was very Spartan, right? And you're like, and then same thing, like, everyone still, Heyman does not have the poor track record that Bob Nightingale does on actually, you know, nailing reports. Like, you know, there's been, people are wrong every once in a while, but, like, there's still that, like, okay, where's the second one? Where's like Jeff Passan? Where's Joel Sherman? Where's Ken Rosenthal? You know, that kind of, we're all kind of waiting, and then, like, oh, no, it's actually happening. And then, so, first sticker shock. The total deal, 3 years, 102. Wait, the Dodgers did a 3-year deal? Like, they didn't. I mean, that's still a short term. Like, look, on one level, right? The reigning Cy Young winner, like, signing a 3-year deal. Like, what the hell is wrong with this market on one level, right? But, like, when the Dodgers were rumored to be, like, a short deal, you're like, that's weird. But then you realize there's opt-outs after each year of the deal. And the first the payouts are this: $40 million in 2021, which is a record. Then $45 million in 2022, also a record. And then if he stays around, $17 million in 2023. So essentially, we're talking about a 2-year, $85 million deal, and that is a holy shit contract because, like, you know, of all the times we talked about, the, like, you know, oh, the Dodgers are going to offer this, like, fanciful 2-year deal. It's going to have a ridiculous number. No one ever takes it. They always take the big money. But, like, when – and I guess it came out that the Mets' actual offer was 3 years, 105, also with opt-outs, I believe. And I believe had it worked out – had he opted out after the second year, it would have been 2 years, 80. So they were actually right there with the Dodgers. But, like, that is a – insane deal. Like, I'm not saying it's, like, good or bad, because, like, you know, players should get what they want. They get what they get, right? It's a market. But it's just, like, that was a stunning, a truly stunning number. Now, we talked about this, like, a lot. Like, we always talk about what about the luxury tax? And the reason it comes up is because the Dodgers haven't paid the luxury tax for 3 years. Now, they would have paid it last year had David Price not opted out. So that was, like, a sort of luck of the draw thing. Like, they were over it because of the Mookie Betts trade. They tried initially, if they would have traded Jock Peterson and Ross Stripling to the Angels, I think they probably would have been under in a normal year. But, like, that was the impetus of that extra move, right? And now, so, like, they've been dancing near the competitive balance. Like, so it's not like a false, like, thought and how the sport essentially treats the CBT threshold as a salary cap, but the Dodgers are going to blow past it this year. As of right now, they're at, if you fill out the roster with, like, minimum players, given where they're at, and they still have Austin Barnes and Walker Buehler arbitration eligible, who they haven't solved that yet, but they're rough, just under $240 million. In CBT payroll. And so the threshold's 210. So it's 20% for the first 20 million, 32% for the next 20 million, and then 62.5% for anything over 250 million. And then if you get past 250, you also have your draft pick drop. Your first draft pick drops 10 spots. So, like, there's cost to it. But, like we said, people worry about, like, the luxury tax a lot. And first of all, fans should never worry about it because it's the owner's money and they're the ones spending it. But, like, it's also just a cost, right? Like, it's really not that much if you think about it. Like, right now, if they're at $240 million, the tax is $7.2 million, right? So that's not a lot. Like, that shouldn't keep you from doing moves, like, necessarily. However, they also don't really have a third baseman right now, and we're still waiting. Cough, cough, Justin Turner. Like that. I think that's probably still going to happen. It's just like we're just sort of waiting for it at this point. The Brewers, I believe, were rumored to be interested this week, but and that was even after they signed Colton Wong to a 2-year, $18 million deal. So you don't know how much payroll they have, but like I suspect the Dodgers will still sign Justin Turner. But like it's just like they were going to go over the luxury tax had they not signed Trevor Bauer, but this just like blows them past it. Like it's just funny like how much we sort of fixate on it, and then they're just like, nope, we're just going to do all of it. But the other thing about this deal that I sort of like is that it stops the idiotic like Friedman's never signed a free agent for $100 million, right? It's such an arbitrary like thing. A, they say, oh, it's a free agent deal. Yeah, they just signed Mookie Betts for $365 million. He just wasn't a free agent, right? Like they signed Kershaw for $93 million when he was going to opt out a couple years ago. They signed Jansen for $80 million. They got deals done. Their payroll, like since Friedman has taken over, has averaged well over $200 million. like they're even when the years they don't pay luxury tax, they're like right at the threshold. They are not like cheaping out, right? They're not doing a Cubs like this year. They're not doing what the Red Sox did to get rid of Mookie Betts. They've done none of that. Like they've actually spent, and I'm shocked. Like I'm actually shocked they signed Trevor Bauer to this deal. Like what was your initial reaction like just from that standpoint when you heard it?
Right in line with you. I quickly went into what we're going to talk about later, which is not his non-baseballness. I just kind of written it off like that. I thought this would be almost exactly like the Bryce Harper thing, where it's just like the Dodgers are just such an easy name to throw out there as the team with a lot of money, and that the Mets had not a greater need for starting pitching, although the Dodgers certainly didn't have a need for starting pitching. The Mets did the Lindor trade, but I still felt like Cohen maybe had this desire to do the splashy thing and really kind of excite fans. The Mets just made so much sense, and the Dodgers are such an easy name to kind of be the other team. And he's from LA. He actually went to my high school, Trevor Bauer did. I think my old history teacher was the baseball coach. I got to see his name randomly mentioned in a tweet. That was weird.
Okay. I have the name. You have it?
Yeah.
What was your history teacher?
No, I don't remember my history teacher's name. That's the thing. Oh. Like, I know who the coach is, and I'm like, I think that's who I am. I remember it was one of the baseball coaches, but I can't remember if he was the coach or the assistant coach. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that was weird. A lot of I am going to find it really difficult to root for this guy, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, you got me thinking about that. I was on freshman baseball. I initially got cut in tryouts, but when like a bunch of players flunked out at the end in the middle of the season, I was added to the team, and I just remember like it's always weird seeing PE coaches and or like sports coaches like in other settings. And I remember Mr. Heap was like an occasional teacher too, and you're like, wait, what? Like you're like see him out of a sports setting, you're like, what's going on here? Why are you in front of a blackboard right now? That was always weird. But yeah, so the contract, like from a baseball standpoint, you're like, okay, wow, okay, 2 years, $85 million, like nobody's ever gotten paid that in a 2-year stretch. But you're like, for Trevor Bauer? Like that, that's you're on one level you think of that. Look, he was awesome last year. Won the Cy Young for the Reds. I'm not disputing that. It's just like crazy. Like if you look at it, so career ERA in 9 MLB seasons is 3.90. His FIP is 3.88. Now that's career numbers. It's better the last 3 years because there were two good years. Those happen to be Bauer's only 2 years with an ERA under 4 out of nine. The first two of those were cup of coffee years, but still. Now, two things that floored me from Pedro Morris. Pedro Morris' piece, he noted that Alex Cobb, since 2012, which was Bauer's first season, also has a 390 ERA. And this is a devastating couple of sentences from Pedro in like a weird way. Cobb does not have an Instagram or Twitter account. Between those two platforms and his YouTube channel, Bauer is approaching 1 million devotees. In another, very close to this part in the story, Mora also says, Bauer is a clear progenitor of the new era, and he has capitalized by building an outsized online brand for a pitcher with an unspectacular track record. And it's like, it's such a factual statement, like that it is that I just read that I was floored by it. But anyway, like just pointing out that's where it is. The other thing, now this is unfair because it does not count 2020, in which Bauer was excellent and Robbie Ray was terrible. But 2017 to 2019, Bauer, 368 ERA, 124 whip, 28.2% strikeout. Robbie Ray, 372 ERA, 128 whip, 31.9% strikeout rate. Now, again, Robbie Ray was terrible last year, walked like a billion people. Bauer was so obviously that it's just how soon how it was. But what the Dodgers are betting on is for Bauer to be something close to what he was in 2020 when he was just ridiculous. He had a 173 ERA. That was second to Shane Bieber in the majors. 288 FIP was ninth. 36% K rate was fifth. If you K minus walk or strikeout minus walk rate at Fangraphs, he was third. He only walked like 6%. So it was 29.9 for this. He easily won this NL Cy Young, 27 and a 30 first place votes. Now, he also had a great year in 2018 with the Indians, 221 ERA, 244 FIP. But then in 2019, his ERA was 4.5, his FIP was 434. So the reason he was able to do so well, one of the reasons was his four-seam fastball got really good. Now, in an article on Baseball Savant, if you go by run value for the four-seam fastball, Bauer was negative 11 runs last year, which was the best in the majors. Tied for number two was Walker Buehler at minus 10. So very interesting to sort of have those two in the same rotation. Ben Clemens at Fangraphs also noted that in the first 8 years of Bauer's career, his four-seam fastball was actually a negative. It was a below average pitch by batted ball data and run value. It was negative half of a run in total. But last year it was plus 14.3 runs by their methodology. So, like, it got awesome. And he had a massive increase in spin rate in late 2019 that he carried over into 2020. Now, Bauer's been very vocal about this at various times. Like, I forgot there was a game where he, like, went out and, like, he was talking about how easily you could, like, manipulate spin rate if you just use certain substances. Then he, like, went out and did it in a start. Very like publicly, but then, you know, he hasn't like since then said like, hey, I'm using, because no one's going to actually say that. There's obviously like a sort of an issue in baseball, or that baseball says they want to sort of get a handle on this, but like a lot of pitchers use this. This is not something I don't think is necessarily that controversial in like the general defenses. Everybody's using it. Now, like Garrett, that includes like Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander. These were a couple pitchers named in the suit brought by the former Angels clubhouse person who was fired last year because he was the guy who had like the best goop, as they called it, or whatever, in the league that pitchers would use. The general rule on this is like everyone's using it. Just don't be obvious when you're using it, you know, like because another, and also the teams tend not to police this because if you go out and tattle on someone and say, hey, you got to watch them, you know, like two or three pitchers on your own team are also using. So like it's a tough, you can't start pointing fingers because everyone's sort of using it. Now that's just a general term. Like I said, I don't want to dwell on that for Bauer because that's not that important right now. But so Zips, Dan Zimborski's projection system at Fangraphs has Bauer as the sixth best pitcher this year in 2021. His projections looked, it was 3.33 ERA, which is a 1.31 ERA plus, and 4.5 Fangraphs WAR, roughly the same for 2022. That's a very good pitcher for those 2 years. Now, is it $85 million worth? Like, whatever. But a lot of these contracts get, I'm not into the dollars, necessarily dollars for work, because I don't think it's linear. What you're buying with a free agent or an expensive free agent is like certainty, some level of certainty. And there's one thing that's like good about Bauer. While, again, ERA over 4 in 7 of his 9 seasons, but 2 of the last 3 were good, excellent, in fact. He has not really had like an arm injury. He's relatively durable. Even if you like, you're not getting like Cy Young Bauer, which again, they're hoping for, and they, you know, that's what they're paying for, really. His worst Fangraphs WAR over the last 5 seasons is 2.6. He was actually 2.5 this year, but it was in a very shortened season, so he was going to blow past that. In his last 5 seasons in total, he's averaged, or he has a 3.64 ERA, 3.63 FIP, and his 17 WAR, which is 3.4 per year, but again, that includes a truncated season, so it's a little, it's more like a 4 WAR average. That has him 11th in the majors. He's 6th in innings in that time. Again, hasn't been hurt. So, like, you're getting a very, like, sort of durable guy. You're paying for the certainty, I think. The other thing that why he's sort of a fit, you know, Bauer's always been, like, you know, he's stubborn, I would say. When he was younger, he was especially so, to where, like, he clashed with, like, people in Arizona and Cleveland. But he's had his own, like, training methods. He was one of the early adopters of, like, driveline baseball and one of their biggest, like, success stories. But he's very, like, analytical in that sense. Now, Blake Treinen, current Dodger, was on MLB Network Radio on Friday, and he was very excited about having Bauer join the Dodgers. He described the Dodgers as having a mix of traditional insight and new age analytics. And then this is Blake Treinen on Bauer. Quote, the way he approaches the game on a mental aspect, developing pitches aspect, because that fits perfectly with what the Dodgers are doing. I got to see a piece of that last year, which helped me get back to some of the form I wanted to, how I wanted to be as a pitcher. So, like, on that level, right, that's the fit. That's what the Dodgers are going for. I'm sure they're aware of, like, you know, Bauer's pitching. Now, it's not official yet. I'm wanting to see, like, Bauer has said whichever team signs him, he wants to, like, he thinks he's better or best suited to pitch, like, every fourth day. And that, you know, nobody really does that. I want to know how often they're going to let him do that, if at all. And so I'm interested to see that. Once it becomes official and we start, like, getting interviews and stuff, I would like to see how they sort of implement that, because I think that could be, like, sort of fascinating in a way. But now the other there's a, like, a good portion of, like, the Dodgers fan base. There was a good portion of the Mets fan base who were, like, hoping that that their team did not sign Bauer. And, you know, he has, like, a long history of, like, of things. I know you mentioned your reaction was that as well. We're going to get into it. But do you have, from a baseball standpoint, do you have anything else to add?
No, you covered all the baseball aspects. I think the spin rate thing will be interesting. I'll see how consistent he is. I think one of the reasons why I'm as bummed about this as I am is that there's so much about this that I want to be excited about. I want to be excited about an analytics and scientific driven pitcher joining the team. I want to be excited about the high AAV short term deal that we've talked about forever. Is it a thing they would ever do? I want to talk more about the CBT and how I've always sort of defended the Dodgers going under, being hard to go under, thinking that if they can prove to us that they're doing that, to be able to, when they do it, spike hard and go way over it for a year or two and then get back under and kind of abuse the system that way. I think that's that kind of nitty-gritty management stuff is all really exciting to me. And I can't, because everything I've ever seen from Trevor Bauer, everything I know other than that he went, you know, we're high school and college alumni, and all the science stuff is a jerk.
Yeah.
An online jerk. Bully. Michael Bauman on the Ringer has, I think my favorite article so far on the signing, and that he, because he talks about why I think a lot of people are really quick to, people who do care about how their athletes are. And there are some people who are just, they're that's just the product on the field. That's all they care about. And if that's you, hats off. but that's not how sports are for me. I care about who the people are. It's so much more fun to root for a Clayton Kershaw or a Mookie Betts than it is, you know, someone I don't know enough about, or and certainly someone who has a troubled past. And the Rainer article I mentioned does a really good job of saying, like, there are people who would dismiss him, saying, ah, he's just being a contrarian, a controversial guy. I've got buddies like that. The difference is that in Bauer's interactions with fans, there is a clear power dynamic difference. He is the superstar with millions of followers and was a rich person, is now a very rich person, and these fans aren't. And to create, to turn that into an antagonistic and adversarial interaction in and of itself with that power difference is bullying. And so I think the other quick dismissal is, oh, don't bring politics into this. And one, bullying isn't a political thing. But two, when it comes to the other thing, he's denied climate change in previous. A lot of these tweets are older, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, where he was very against very derogatory towards immigrants, had a very, I think, insensitive and inappropriate response to the Indians logo, saying he never met a Native American who hated it. Come on, Chief Wahoo, really?
he had one. He was like tweeting about like Obama not being born in America, which is just racist bullshit. Like, and
he falsely, yeah. Like he didn't link the false quote of George Soros being behind the protests and the riots. But he quote tweeted it and replied to the person saying, oh, you can't do that. You'll get labeled a racist. And it's like that is conspiracy theorist and anti-Semitic. Like all of these things are like, and people, oh, but he, you know, just because he did that once doesn't mean he is anti-Semitic or is, you know, he has a female agent and a Jewish agent, therefore he can't be anti-Semitic. And I'm not interested in getting in the nitty-gritty rhetoric of that. Like, this is like if it quacks like a duck, like just everything all of his interactions I've ever really seen strike me as someone that is not someone I'm excited to root for.
Right. And like you said, I want to be clear, like it's not political. Like there, we couldn't be
fans of baseball.
Yeah, right. Like well over like half of baseball, and it's probably like 75%.
Yep,
are probably like lean Republican. I would guess
or heavily. Like, yeah,
yeah, heavily. Right, like not everyone's Aubrey Huff. Right, like so.
Yeah,
but like so, it's not right. But like. I want to be clear, like this is not the main objection. It's his actions, right? Like how he's treated people.
And there are some views that I think get easily labeled political that shouldn't be politics. Like that's
right,
not,
exactly.
Shouldn't be a political statement. Like you thinking that Chief Wahoo is not a racist stereotype. That exceeds politics and is just common decency. Listening to people, you did not try very hard, Trevor Harder, Bauer, to talk to Native Americans if you couldn't find one that found it offensive. I'm sorry.
Right. And there's been numerous.
Yeah.
So I laid out a few examples here. I thought a few people put it pretty well. Again, going to Pedro Mora from The Athletic, his another sentence in his article, this is about Bauer, obviously. He has wielded his influence to belittle and harass people, particularly women, across the internet. He has trolled. another Ken Davidoff had a pretty good like summary of like some of Bauer's transgressions. One was with a college student in January 2019. This is from Davidoff. In all, over a span of 3 days, Bauer tweeted at least 17 times, either directly at the woman or at others, while discussing her and the argument. He had a back and forth with this woman. Then also Davidoff here, predictably, the woman has said she endured considerable abuse from Bauer's followers. Now, this is a pattern. In 2020, there was a reporter. So Bauer has like momentum is like his sort of video media company, I guess. That's who he released the video through, I believe, when he signed with the Dodgers. Now he tweeted like he very like flippantly like promoted a video about like I forgot the exact I don't have it in front of me, dang it. But it was like you know, want to see a team going through a COVID outbreak or a potential COVID outbreak? Watch this video on Momentum. And it's like, see, and then there, he was very descriptive about it. Like that in itself, not bad, but a reporter, like I thought Bauer was like flippant with that, right? At the least, it, not bad by on its face. And then a reporter was like flippant and chiding him. And then Bauer went back to her and said, like I said, I'm not going to quote this because there's been a number of like articles who are like linking to these, and that's sort of these people have gotten harassed because people go and find these, and that's sort of the problem. But so I'm not going to link to it. I'm just going to generalize what happened. And Bauer basically said, well, you know, he went back at her and said, here, let me send some followers your way, right? And so a sort of direct call to action. And then...
And a lot, like a lot of successful trolls, everything he does is done with, if you want to root for him and take his side, plausible deniability, but come on.
So, and I thought this was, this sort of summed it up too. So Ken Rosenthal details some of these back on January 22nd. Bauer... I gave him like two separate statements, I believe, and I don't know which one was first. I think this was the order. I think this was the first one. This is from Bauer to Rosenthal. I don't shy away from confrontation, and I'm often quick to defend myself, but I am by no means a bully, and I take great offense to my character being called into question. I understand what comes with having a following on social media, but I have never asked for, nor do I condone anyone making threats or lewd comments on my behalf. I will interject here. Again, he didn't directly ask for threats, but he knew what he was doing when he said, let me send some followers your way by quote tweeting a reporter, right? Like he's
and he knows he his knows, audience and he knew
yes. like
he so knows like this that, is a, an antagonistic interaction and then heightens it. And it's just ugh.
And that yeah, that's so that's like, all right, whatever. But and then his other statement. I have also I have been made aware that some of the interactions related to a specific Twitter exchange may have had a negative impact, which I'm sorry you're offended is how I read that. This is again Bauer. That was not my intention. I will wield the responsibility of my public platform more responsibly in the future. Now, honestly, if he does that, great, right? Like that's all you could ask. But like so far, that hasn't been the case, and you can understand like why, how that's off-putting, right? Like, so especially to the people who are on the receiving end of it, or like just generally, like we've mentioned this, it's an imbalance. Like on Twitter, he has 424,000 Twitter followers. I didn't look at like what Instagram is, but I'm sure it's roughly similar there. Now, and it's not necessarily always Bauer himself. It's what, how the fans, his fans are encouraged to really go after these people. And it becomes like a living hell. The reporter in question in 2020 said she received death threats and Holocaust jokes for like months on end after this. So like, what the hell, right? Now, the other issue is like, we are in a very like heightened time of like women having to put up with just untold amounts of shit in sports and especially in baseball. Want to be clear here, not equating Bauer's actions like on for online bullying with sexual harassment, which are the few examples I'm bringing, but it's a general like dismissing and belittling of women that leads to the sort of environment where they're not protected and or safe. So I think it's somewhat related in that aspect. Now, again, not equating this, I'm just giving you an idea of where we're at. So in the last 2 weeks, right, Jared Porter on the Mets, he was hired as GM, and within a month he was fired because of a story surfaced that from back in 2016 where he sent, what was it, like 62 straight unanswered texts to a woman, including like a couple pics of like a bulge in his pants and then one of a dick. He said the dumbest defense I've ever heard. It was a stock image of a dick. Like, oh, okay. Oh, it's totally fine. Now, just this last week, Mickey Callaway, Angels pitching coach, there were five different women came out in The Athletic accusing him of harassment in various cities over various years. And then seven people in the story, another seven women said they weren't ever harassed by Callaway, but they all heard stories and were warned about Callaway. So, like, what the hell? Callaway's been on multiple teams. Porter's been in multiple organizations. All these teams come out and go, I had no idea. Like, you know, there's no way we could have known. Like, how did this happen? So, like, everyone has a blind eye to it because you have to assume, like, they just don't care, right? And so, like, when Porter was fired, Sandy Alderson on the Mets, who again had Mickey Callaway as manager in with the Mets. So, like, you know, what the hell are you doing if you don't know about these things? But every report about like Jared Porter before he was hired was like, oh, what a great guy. What a great baseball guy. Oh, you're going to love him. He's a great baseball guy. And so, Hannah Kaiser at Yahoo asked a wonderful question in the Sandy Alderson press conference. Like, of all the people you talked to before you hired Porter in as part of the process, how many were women? And Alderson said, none. And he's like, unfortunately, that's where we're at. There's nobody, like, there's no women in those positions right now. That's the problem. Why would there be when the sport, like, doesn't value them? Like, every time this comes out, there's been, like, countless other articles saying, like, this was my experience with sexual harassment. I didn't want to talk about it. But now these others are coming out. Like, every woman in the industry has stories like this because they're treated like shit. And, like, you have to respect that, and you have to respect them. And, you know, like, again, for Bauer, you know, we'll say it's both men and women that he's like fought with on Twitter, but it's more often than not that the women are the ones who get harassed. And he has to know that. He has to know, like you said, what his platform brings, right? Like, you can't like go after these people and like sick your fans on them, even if it's quote unquote unintentional, because you know that's going to happen. So, like, if you just imagine, like, you're a woman in the industry, right? Like, it's incredibly frustrating right now, right? So, like, why if MLB like continually ignores them or ignores the like systemic problems within the industry that makes them feel unwanted, unsafe, it's understandable, but if people are just turned off in general by the sport, right? So, like, that, like, that's where it comes down to. Like, and again, not saying Bauer is part of the like the sexual harassment part, but just in terms of like making women feel like accepted, you can't just say, well, Bauer is just a troll. That's not a defense. He needs to grow up, and that's sort of where we're at right now.
Yeah. No, you put a nice bow on that. Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Well, in one of the better transitions, I do have a trivia question about good times. Okay, so Bauer won the National League Cy Young last year. This is so dumb.
And this is, you know, what's really interesting though that you did that is that this is what the season is gonna kind of feel like, mm-hmm. you know, especially with him being a starting pitcher, right? It's like, oh, it's like there's gonna be some days where he's like not a part, like maybe you see him on the bench, but that's it. And then he'll pitch, and I'm like, oh, right, Dodgers do have that guy. I know some people won't probably even be able to watch his starts. I probably will. I don't know.
So Just to go off on a little bit of a thing here too, like, so this is, again, not trying to equate them, but like generally, like the, like if you're gonna stir shit, right, or make it or joke about someone or something, the, like, you generally punch up, right? You attack the man or whatever, like the industry or whatever. Sometimes Bauer, like, stirring shit is good. Like, when he like calls out MLB on dumb rules and stuff. Like last year, he wanted to wear the free Joe Kelly shoes that he had, and MLB said, "No, we're gonna like disqualify you or take you out of a game if you do." Meanwhile, like they pointed to a rule that said you can't have, like, I forgot what the rule was, but like D. Gordon, like a week earlier, had worn like In-N-Out shoes, and that you're not supposed to have like commerce, you know, promote stuff on your shoes, and he like rightfully pointed that out. And I that's good when you're like pointing out stuff, dumb stuff like that. That's fine. But like if you're starting up shit, like going punching downward, that's never good. And like that's sort of where it's at. But I just wanted to bring that up because I had forgotten about the Joe Kelly shoes until we were talking about it. But so Bauer, whatever shoes he's wearing, is the reigning Cy Young winner in the National League. He's only the second Cy Young winner to switch teams right after winning the award and going to the reigning World Series winners. Who was the first?
I will see if I can answer that after this. Something about Cy Young winners switching teams to World Series winners, right? That it. I actually think I saw this tweeted. I think this was a Sarah Lane's tweet.
Drat.
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Is it Roger Clemens?
It is Roger Clemens.
Yeah. Twitter helps.
Now, there's been a couple of times in like life as a baseball fan, just generally when something happens and you're like, what the fuck, right? Like, well, look, we've already cussed on this.
I'm about to say, I noticed you're just taking for everything it's worth.
So, and this was, so 98, Roger Clemens had like, he had just, you know, started the program as it were, and won two Cy Youngs with Toronto after he was dumped by the Red Sox. And so after 98, the Yankees had won 114 games. Clemens was the two-time Cy Young winner. Then they trade for Roger Clemens. And you're like, what the hell, man? Like, this sucks. And so they actually ended up winning the next two. He won a Cy Young in 01 again. And they got to the World Series. And then they lost. But, like, it was just wild. The other sort of moment like that was when Cliff Lee signed back with the Phillies after they had traded for Roy Halladay. They traded for Roy Halladay and then traded Cliff Lee away to afford Roy Halladay and then signed Cliff Lee as a free agent again. This was after, like, they won one World Series. They got to another one. They were still excellent. And I just remember thinking that they had, like, Roy Oswalt, too, in the rotation, and Cole Hamels. It's like, what the hell? Like, this is like a goddamn super team. And then people are, like, talking about the Dodgers rotation now. It is really awesome. Like, they have three Cy Young Award winners, but, like, David Price, I mean, sure. Like, but doesn't mean he's, like, that good now. But, like, Kershaw, Buehler, Bauer, Price, Urias, and that's even before getting to, like, Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin. From a baseball standpoint, that is pretty incredible. So, like, and especially after the Padres, like, literally traded for three starters this offseason. So, like, it's going to be a pretty incredible sort of division there.
You have a Dodgers rewind. Before we get that, we talked about sort of the like, unfortunately, we do a trivia question, so we have to transition to it. There's a book, I haven't read it, but it looks really good, and it fits this on, like, how to like sports when things are hard. It's Loving Sports When They Don't Love You Back by Jessica Luther.
Kavitha Davidson, yep. And yeah, Jack Luther, yeah.
I'm going to be reading this before the baseball season. So if anyone wants to join me, because I could use probably some of what it's talking about.
Yep.
Okay. Dodgers rewind.
Yep. We have one this week, somewhat related. I'll get to why in a second, but I was actually amazed we hadn't done this yet because of my propensity for the 1988 Dodgers, but Tim Belcher, so he started game one in the 88 World Series, one of the more, like, famous games in the history of the franchise. He was the starter. He didn't stick around long, mind you, but he was the starter for that game, and he was a integral part of that team. So the Dodgers got him the year before. They had Rick Honeycutt, former pitcher for them and future longtime pitching coach. They traded him to the A's at the end of August for a player to be named later. Belcher was 5 days later was that player. So he was four seasons plus that month with the Dodgers. Sub 3 ERA in all but one of the years. He was 50-38 with a 2.99 ERA, a 1.18 ERA plus in 806 innings. He was very good, like with them. Like there's no doubt about it. He was third in the Rookie of the Year in 88. I looked at the voting. He got three of the 24 first place votes, but he was well behind Chris Sabo, and then Mark Grace was second. So it was a nice little thing there. And the next year in 89, he was actually sixth in Cy Young voting. He got a second place vote and a third place vote back when they only had three votes. And then Oral Hershiser that year was fourth. Reliever Mark Davis won that year. Just an odd year. In 89, when he was sixth in the Cy Young, Belcher led the major leagues with eight shutouts, and he led the National League with 10 complete games. It was a very good year. He started opening day that year, too, but Oral Hershiser, the reigning god among men from the previous year, he had the flu. So he did. That's the only reason Hershiser didn't start. Hershiser started the next day. Belcher got bombed that day in Cincinnati. Paul O'Neill hit a three-run homer. He gave up six runs in like two and a third, so it wasn't very good. Now, Belcher's only postseason with the Dodgers was 88. On the surface, he had a 4.88 ERA. You're like, that's not that good. But like, if you look closely, that team was lacking like length in their. They had a very good bullpen, but you know, this is a different time too. But you also didn't want to rely on it too much. Like John Tudor was like injured, and they didn't know how injured until they figured out in the playoffs where he walked off the mound in the World Series. But like, outside of Hershiser, who pitched like every inning. They didn't really have anyone else to do that. And so Belcher kind of did that. Like game two of the NLCS with the Dodgers down 0-1, Belcher pitched 8 1/3 and they won. He pitched seven innings in game five. Now he allowed four runs in this game, but the Dodgers were up 6-0. So like he really was just in there to like, you know, smooth it along. So he's 2-0 there. He was bad in game one of the World Series. He was very wild. He only pitched two innings. He gave up the grand slam to Jose Canseco. But in game four, the pivotal game of the series, the Dodgers up 2-1. He went 6 2/3 innings and then gave the ball to Jay Howell, who redeemed himself from the previous night and from getting suspended in the previous round. So Belcher was 3-0 that postseason. And I think, you know, better than the ERA would suggest. Now, the Dodgers traded him to the Reds in November 1991 with John Wetland for Eric Davis and Kip Gross. That trade did not work out well for the Dodgers. But something I discovered about this was fascinating. How exactly, like, Belcher, like, started his pro career. So, like, I didn't know a lot of the details about this till earlier this morning, and it just fascinated me. So, Belcher was the first overall pick in 1983 to the Twins, but he didn't sign. He interviewed Belcher was interviewed by Eric Malinowski at Fox Sports in 2014. Belcher said, I just felt like I was a victim of some circumstances that didn't allow me to sign with the club. You know, that was a time when the Twins were at the end of the Calvin Griffith ownership period and they had no money. And when he says they had no money, it was almost literal that year. So the Twins, they drafted Belcher in the first round. They drafted Billy Swift in the second round. They didn't sign either one. Both went on to have like careers of over 20 war. Odomi McDowell, they drafted with the first pick of the June secondary draft, which a thing that kind of went away soon after that. They didn't sign him either, and then he played for 7 years. So, like, they just, like, had no money, and, like, it was just crazy. So, anyway, back then, there was also a January secondary draft. It would go away after 1986, but in January 84, it was still around. the Yankees, I looked back, I don't know exactly how they determined the order for this, because it's not like it's not the same as June, the regular June draft, but the Yankees picked first and they picked Belcher. So the timing of this is weird. So Belcher had some leverage. He was going to return to school. He went to a junior college in Ohio. He ended up signing with the Yankees on February 2nd. So that was a day before he was going to return to school. So he had some decent leverage there, whatever. But back then, for a four-year period after the 81 player strike, the MLB owners were looking to curtail free agency. So they had something called the free agent compensation draft, which was sort of a way to, like, free agency was like 5 years old when this started. So, like, nobody knew exactly how to navigate it yet. And the rule was MLB teams, you could protect up to 26 players, or if your team signed a quote unquote type A free agent. Elias used to have this elaborate statistical thing. His relievers used to get overrated and it was weird. If you signed a type A free agent, you can only protect 24 players. But now, the kicker here, that's just the most 80s owners thing ever. if teams said, we're not going to sign any type A free agents, we opt out of the free agency, like, they don't have to protect anybody. So, like, it's just like they encourage people to, like, not spend, essentially. Now, the problem was, so in 83, right, they drafted Belcher in the January secondary draft on January 17th. But the protected players list, they sent in 3 days earlier because that was the timing of it. Now, Donald Fehr, the longtime attorney for the players union, said, this is from the Associated Press, we were assured by the owners that all the clubs would be able to protect everybody they wanted to protect. That did not happen. To me, the even other caveat that made this insane is that the system was, if you lost a free agent, you get to draft somebody in the free agent compensation draft, but you don't draft it necessarily from the team that signed the player. You could just pick anybody, like, so the A, that's anyone that's unprotected from any team. And so the A's, Tom Underwood, who was sort of like a mediocre pitcher, he was a 4.04 ERA in 15 starts, right? And in 1983, he signed with the Orioles that winter. So, and he was somehow a type A free agent. So the A's got to pick in the compensation draft, and they said, sorry, Yankees, we're taking Belcher. So the Yankees understandably were pissed, right? Because it was a player that only because of a procedural snafu, they could not protect. And, like, so the Yankees said, we're extremely upset about the selection of Tim Belcher as a result of the recent compensation draft. While we do not fault the Oakland club for making use of the system, it's difficult to comprehend how a player who is not eligible to be protected because he was not yet a member of the organization could be eligible for selection. Now, that's a perfectly valid complaint. But on the other hand, screw the Yankees. So, like, you get it, right? Like, so Belcher, after all that, he didn't ever make the majors with the A's, but he it was interesting because the Dodgers, like, immediately started using him in the majors right when they traded for him. They were also bad in 87, but it was the final month. But, yeah, and he ended up pitching for 14 seasons, seven teams, Dodgers, Reds, White Sox, Tigers, Mariners, Royals, and Angels, 146 wins, 416 ERA, 101 ERA plus. Like, if you could be a average to slightly above average major league starter for 14 years, that's an incredible career. And he was the number one pick, but, like, that's a really good career, right? Like, I think that's really good. So his baseball reference war was 26.7, Fangraphs was 30.3. roughly half of his war came with the Dodgers in both, a little bit less than Fangraphs, but just an excellent career. And one thing I didn't put in the notes here, but I remembered, he was on the Angels in one of the first years of interleague play, and they were at Dodger Stadium. I believe the Dodgers were wearing the blue uniforms, the blue tops at home at the time, when Chan Ho Park bunted up along first base and then took issue with a hard tag, I believe, by Belcher, and then did a spinning kick, which on Belcher, which led to a nice brawl, an interleague play brawl. And Belcher was the pitcher with that. So just a good time. I have a Tim Belcher trivia question for you, if you'd like.
Goody.
So he was the first overall pick in 1983 to the Twins, didn't sign. He's one of five number one overall picks to play for the Dodgers. Keep in mind the draft has been going since 1965.
Yep.
How many of these can you name, knowing that you have one in the pocket with Tim Belcher?
Tim Belcher.
I'm giving you that one. Yay! Yeah. So.
Man, this, so I've been thinking about this the whole episode, trying to the thing that gets diluted is like former good prospects are not necessarily the same thing as number one overall picks. You have to deal with international signings, all that. And there's only a very few players that I actually remember. Oh, they were number one overall picks. So I have a question for you. Have we ever done another one of these on Dodgers Rewind?
Oh, I will double check right now.
Because there's one, I have a guess, that I feel like has come up before. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just an early draft pick. I'll go ahead and guess, and then you can tell me.
We have not done any of these.
Oh no, I'm screwed. Well, I'll say the guess anyways. Bobby Valentine?
No, okay. He was. I don't know exactly when he was drafted. I'll look. I think he was like first round 68, but not maybe not first overall.
Okay.
I'll look it up while you're guessing.
Well, that was my best guess, so I'm just screwed. Was David Price number one overall?
He was.
Okay. Now, I'm done. I got two. So one you gave me.
I'm counting him as one of the five, even though technically he has not played for the Dodgers.
Okay. Yeah.
So Valentine was fifth overall in 68.
What overall?
Fifth.
Okay. I'm happy with that as a guess then.
Bauer was third. In 2011, 10. I guess 11. Yeah, it was 11. If you think draft, MLB draft, you should think that one name should come to mind that you should guess.
No. Don't do this to me. My brain isn't working.
The very first draft pick of anybody, Rick Bundy.
Okay. Yeah. He floated in my head and I'm like, nah, yeah. I just dismissed it because I was worried about the timing. And I'm like, I can't, and that factoid was not in my head.
Okay. So the other ones, Daryl Strawberry, 1980, number one overall. And then Adrian Gonzalez, Marlins pick in 2000.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And then he became like a low level guy, right? Like, am I remembering this right? Like, I remember, like, he lost some luster and then became really, really good.
I think at a point when he was a prospect, it wasn't like, this guy's the number one overall pick. But, like,
I remember getting him very cheap in, like, a deep fantasy draft one year and just owning it. And that was his big breakout year after the
trade. So he also sort of, like, sputtered in Texas.
Yeah, It was right after he was traded to San Diego is when I picked him up.
That said, okay, so Baseball America, so 2001 was the year after he's drafted. He was 89th overall, but then he was 31st overall 2 years in a row. So, like, he was pretty highly regarded, and then he dropped to 52nd, but still, like, four years in the top 100, so pretty good. Okay. Actually, yeah, better than I would have thought. Now, of these four... of these five, excuse me, which player has the highest baseball reference WAR?
Strawberry?
Strawberry is second. He has 42.2 WAR.
Is it Monday then?
No, he has 33.1. He's third.
Is it Agon?
It is 43.6.
Okay. Good for him.
Now, David Price, 39.4, conceivably could pass those two while being a Dodger if all goes well. That would certainly be a best case scenario, I believe, over the next 2 years if he's able to get at least four WAR. Tim Belcher had 26 WAR in his career. Very good. That's pretty good.
All right. You know what time it is? We're running late, so I'm gonna rush this. You ready?
I am ready.
It's time for
Questions from Craig.
Five questions from our friend Craig Manami. Fred, your name, Fred Manami. No, it's Craig. Craig. Our friend Craig Manami. The St. Louis Cardinals now have the top two active home run hitters against the Dodgers. Paul Goldschmidt has 32, and Nolan Arenado leads the Rockies with 28 homers against the LA Dodgers. Can Eric name the next five active NL West opponent home run leaders against the Dodgers?
So when I first saw this five, I was thinking, okay, I only have to get three, but then I realized he said next five. So I'm just going to go the ones that came to my head first. Buster Posey, Charlie Blackman.
Posey's tied for first. Blackman's second, or I guess third, with 15.
Trevor Story.
Number five with 11.
Oh, okay.
So you're missing one of the ones with 16 at first, and then someone with 12.
Okay. I want to say...
I'm going to give you one very small hint.
Wait, hold on.
Okay.
What about Brandon Belt?
Number one, tied with Buster Posey. It's with 16.
Okay, and then I'm going to get another guess off before I hint.
Yep.
Why can't I think of them? Now, you know what? I don't know. I need another.
It's a Diamondback.
Yeah, I was thinking of them.
12 home runs in 74 games.
74 games. It's not like
the. Of 12 home runs of a career 60 home runs.
Nice.
Have been against the Dodgers.
Is it Christian Walker?
It is not. Good guess.
Is it David Peralta?
It is not. I'm going to look up this person.
I don't know then.
It is Nick Ahmed.
You know what? I was thinking of him and I'm like, there's no way. Might as well think Tim LoCastro or something. Like, yeah, I didn't think. Wow, that's amazing. All right. Good for Nick.
There you go.
Brother used to be in the Dodger system. Yeah.
So the next question, I have to find them. Jacob, that's me. Do you take credit for the best pro sports period in the history of the Kansas City metro area? I do.
Obviously. Yeah.
And do you think a Kansas NCAA basketball title ranks just below a Chiefs Super Bowl win, but ahead of the Royals winning the World Series in terms of civic pride and joy? The Royals actually brought more people for their celebration than the Chiefs did. There's some speculation that was just a matter of who came first. One, because they hadn't anything to celebrate since 85. And two, the Royals one was so crazily packed that it wasn't necessarily the best experience getting there and getting home. So some people might have been scared off from that. So I actually think those are pretty closely tied. If I had to spitball, I would guess maybe the Chiefs bring a little bit more excitement, but it is really, really close. I think maybe there's a perception that doesn't, because the Royals, when they're bad, which they usually are, you see a lot of empty stadium. But when the Royals are good, this team loves them some baseball. KU is definitely below both, and that's just because you have it's the same thing with colleges in LA, right? A Dodgers or Lakers title is going to do more than a USC or a UCLA title, and that's just because of the splitness. You have Mizzou, you have KU, and you have Kansas State. All of which, like, I'd say Kansas State is definitely sort of third, because it's the furthest away from Kansas City proper. But Mizzou, Lawrence is closer to KC than Mizzou, but if you are on the Missouri side, you have a decently likelihood of being a Mizzou fan. So
I was going to say, what if Kansas State won a basketball title? That'd be kind of amazing, wouldn't it? Like, bring back Richmond, yeah.
So yeah, there you go. It was nice. 80 years ago when Ted Williams was the last player to hit 400 in a qualified season. Since then, there have been just five seasons where a qualified batter hit over 376, with the highest being the 390 that George Brett hit in 1980. since 2011. The highest average in a full regular season has been 348 by DJ LeMahieu in 16. My question will be, will any player hit over 350 in over 500 plate appearances in the next five seasons? And if so, give me three or four players that have the best chance.
Oh, God. I don't think someone will hit 350. The best chance? So let's go with... So I think Juan Soto.
Yeah, that was going to be my guess. Thief.
And like... Didn't like DJ LeMahieu hit like 370 this year or something crazy? Like, or like it was like close. So, still going back to the Yankees, I want to put him up there just because he's a high average guy. So like, yeah. And then
and he always has been, like, he's kind of showed that, because a lot of times these batting titles will be like kind of random fluke seasons, and he's certainly shown his hit tools not fluky.
Yeah, there's, I'm trying to think of like who. Yeah, I don't know. I wish there was like an Ichiro type that I could go with, you know, like, man, yeah, because what, like, you know, or it could be like a Miguel Cabrera type hitter, but like, who is that? It's probably Soto. I mean, I would think. I'm just going with those two. I can't think of a third.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I'm kind of struggling because I'm like pulling up a bunch of names I'm thinking of, and they all have that like that 1.340 season, and then the rest are all in the sort of the 290s, 305s, none that make you think, oh, this guy's going to do it. Like, maybe someone will just get lucky and that'll happen. But so yeah, I'm just Juan Soto, done. That's my answer.
Boom. Yeah.
I am going to give each of you 200 true blue bucks. Here are they're like real money, but more fun. Here are a series of Super Bowl prop bets. You must bet all of the money, but you don't have to bet on each prop bet. The one with the most money at the end of the game wins the Eric Jacob trophy. He said contest. Oh, I think there's going to be a trophy.
I looked at this question earlier, and I was concentrating so much on the actual questions themselves, the bets, that I didn't notice the 200 true blue LA bucks before. So like, I was like, oh, okay. So
this is a thing we would do on Dodger Thoughts / True Blue LA Super Bowl parties when those were things we could do safely. We would get Monopoly money. And if anyone is, you know, when you're able, if you have a big enough family where you're already safely isolated, or, you know, you want to do this digitally, or you want to save this idea for when we're able to do this safely, this is the way to enjoy the Super Bowl, is to just get some Monopoly money out, have everyone pitch in $5-$10 of real money, and then that gets you the fake money, and then use the fake money to make prop bets throughout the game. Okay. It's a ton of fun.
So, want me to go first with the anthem, and we can just snake it, or like you could pick.
Yeah, go for it.
For the anthem, I'm going over. It's, so we looked this up before. Jasmine Sullivan and Eric Church. It's a duo singing the anthem, and it's minute 59. So I'm picking the over. And I'm putting $50 on it.
You are literally stealing my bet. Well, that just doesn't work. I'm going to put $100 on the over.
Oh, nice. All right.
There we go. Anthem. Next is the coin toss, heads or tail. I'm not going to bet this.
Oh, you're just passing.
I'm passing.
Okay. Wow. Shouldn't we have a rule? Shouldn't you have to bet a dollar?
It specifically says you don't have to bet on each prop bet. All right. Craig gave me permission.
The funny part about this, I was in my head, I wasn't thinking to skip any of them, but like, I was thinking it would have been funny if I put 150 on this, like, and that's the whole bet.
don't have to watch the game. Bye.
Yeah, I will bet 20 on tails.
Okay. You're up.
Super Bowl team with the first touchdown. Like, you know, you want to, the Chiefs are so dynamic offensively. You want to pick them. Now, the only reason I would pick the Buccaneers is if I went second and you picked the Chiefs. Uh-huh. So I'm picking the Chiefs. And I will put let's see. I will put 25 on them.
I'm putting 50 on the Chiefs as I type a lot. Eric, you said 50. You said, what'd you say, 25?
Yeah, 25. I'm actually putting this in our sheet too. So we got them.
Cool. First offensive play will be a run or a pass. I'm going to put $1 on a pass.
Okay, so I'm at 105. I'm going to go. You said pass.
So I have a question for prop bets. If it's a quarterback, if it's a failed pass play that turns into a scramble, that's a run, correct?
I believe yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's the result of the play, not the intent.
Okay. Right. Yeah. So I'm going to say run for $15.
I'm going to put, yeah, no, I already said, ha 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 ha, over under 56.5.
Okay. This is me. I am at 120. No, I'm at 110. Wow. Okay. I will say 10. I'll say 25 on the under.
I was going to do 9 on the under.
Okay. So if my math is right, you have 40 left and I have 40 left.
Hey, look at that.
No. I have 40, 45, right? Let's see. 70, 95, 110, 130. I have 65 left. I cannot count. So I look, Craig and his thing put 3.5 as the line. I looked this morning and it's 3. So the Chiefs are favored by 3. So that, who are we picking?
I will be, I'm taking the Chiefs to cover.
And so for 40?
Yes, all of it.
Okay, I think I'm also taking the Chiefs, but my under bet is like a sort of hedge because I think that's why the way Tampa Bay wins is if they like just sort of maim Patrick Mahomes. So I don't know, but 65 is a lot. I probably should have put more on the under, but whatever. So we both take KC minus 3. You have 40. I have 65. We're good.
All right. Super Bowls are all about happy hour style food, the best food, hot wings, pizza, maybe submarine sandwiches. But what about chips and dips? Choose your favorites for a Super Bowl party between the classic onion dip, salsa, guacamole, 7-layer dip, queso, or just let's make nachos.
So I'm not a big 7-layer dip guy because it almost doesn't it. Aren't two of the 7 layers sour cream and guacamole?
Craig mentions this is sort of cheating.
Yeah. So, no. It's like, I'm out. I'm out. Like, I'm 5-layer dip maximum. That's my rule. No. So it's one of the, like, salsa, you can't go wrong with salsa ever. Queso is also good, but, like, if it's for a Super Bowl, you'd think, like, queso has to be hot.
It has to be like hot, and it's so much better with like a deeper bowl. I found as if that when you put immediately when you're putting some on your plate, or you have to like drizzle it over. I want something a little bit more portable, and I agree the temperature matters too much.
And so for me, it's like it's salsa or the classic onion dip, the powder that you pour
into Rick Monday of dips for me is a classic Dean's French onion dip or one you make yourself with sour cream. It's so good. Yes,
and I like it with actual Ruffles. I like the it has to be a ridge chip, I think,
or,
for me.
I agree, ridge chip or tiny the long and thin pretzels.
Oh. All right. I've never dipped pretzels in the onion dip.
You should give it a try, my friend.
It's delicious. I've done that with mustard, although I wouldn't consider that like a... So tomorrow, I'm pretty sure I'm going to go get wings. I'm going to also go get chips, and I'll probably get a dip because I didn't think about it before. So now I will. So thank you very much, Craig. What about you? The other stuff I know.
Salsa's interesting in that I have a allergic aversion to cilantro.
Oh, so, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
Pro tip to those who are similar: Trader Joe's salsa does not have cilantro in it.
I think they
might have a few varieties, but most of them don't, and they are delicious and they're really good. Same thing with chilies. Their salsa does not have cilantro, and I like that a lot. I love queso. There's a brewery here in town that has a phenomenal one that they're taking off the menu for a while after the Super Bowl. So maybe I'll go get some, but probably not. Probably sticking to my 20 hot wings, a lot of ranch, a lot of blue cheese.
You know what's also good with queso is our soft pretzels.
Sure.
Yeah, that's an excellent dip. Or usually they probably have it like beer cheese or whatever, whatever. It's in the same family. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm going to go get something to eat maybe. And then, we'll talk. We'll be back. Maybe we skip next week. I don't, this upcoming, since we're recording late, we'll see.
We'll talk to you after the Dodgers sign Justin Turner. Basically next is
that's a good way of putting it. Bearing something else weird.
Yeah. or reasonable facsimile. Like, I mean, people are like, we're talking about like trading for, Matt Chapman, which is like, all right, like, look, we didn't think they were going to sign Bauer, but it doesn't mean you have to start. Or and Jose Ramirez is another popular. I don't see any of those happening, but I didn't see Bauer signing either. So here we are. We'll talk to you in a week ish. But spring training is almost around the corner. And thanks for listening, everybody.